Good morning. Thanks for listening to the show here on KJZZ 91.5 with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein, and now time for the Friday newscap and some voices from the news this week.
Oh, bull honky. They're just a liberal court. First of all, if they really did their due diligence, they would know that that's certainly not my motivation.
Martha McSally, Arizona rejected you in 2018, and you know why. You were too close to Donald Trump, and you lost.
If the Democrats are so hot on this, they could have done something on it. They want to do it now. They had 17 witnesses. Republicans had none. They want to make it 18-0 going forward because they think Bolton's going to help them.
Mr. Chief Justice, I send a question to the desk for President's Counsel.
The question from Senator Sinema to the President's Counsel.
And with us to talk about the Senate impeachment trial, a new intense anti-Martha McSally ad and more, our former Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays and Marcus Dellartino of First Strategic. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
Great to be here.
So, Chris, a lot of fun. Let's talk about the Senate impeachment trial.
You've both been listening.
That's one way to describe it.
So general observations on this. Now we found out it appears we're not going to actually hear from witnesses, so the trial itself could be over as soon as tonight, frankly. Has this been worth the effort?
Well, you know, obviously it depends on who you ask, but I think overall it has. You know, I think that the Democrats were able to highlight for the American people, you know, the clearly inappropriate, very impeachable acts of the president. And, you know, despite the fact that they weren't able to get witnesses, we know that information, especially from John Bolton, will eventually come out. The truth always does. And at that point, you know, the Republicans in the Senate are going to have to face the music. So I think on balance, probably so, but clearly the Republicans want to cut it off quickly and they want to move on and they want to get this behind them. But, you know, that obviously is not going to happen.
Marcus, that's been the whole big question. When you know it's going to go a party line vote, is it worth doing? Based on what you've seen, have we really learned anything?
First of all, I want to talk about your lead-in because they used the word bull honky. And I want to tell you that nobody uses that word. You can use cow cookies or monkey muffins, but you can't use bull honky. And second of all, I will tell you that, no, I differ. I think this has been a monumental waste of time. I think everybody knew from the get-go that that he would not be impeached. I don't think that there is a monumental amount of new evidence that has been introduced. I think that if we continue to go down this path with future presidents, we'll be in impeachment hearings from here until the rest of my lifetime, certainly. But, you know, I think that there was a failure. Successful impeachments start with bipartisanship, and I think the history reflects that. And that is where the critical error was made, was that there was zero bipartisanship. Now, the question remains whether that's possible in today's environment, and the jury is definitely out on that one. And when you look at polling right now, you can see the overwhelming majority of Americans already have their mind made up of who they're going to vote for president. Either I'm with Donald Trump or I am not. So the window of voters that you could influence from the get-go was very small.
I think that's true, but I think, you know, when you look at the fact that, you know, there was a UCLA poll that just came out in the last couple of days that showed that the number of independents in the U.S. who support impeachment has risen dramatically just during the pendency of the trial. That's where I think the impact of the trial probably lies is, you know, demonstrating this, highlighting the information for independents, and then, you know, we'll obviously see how that plays out through the election.
Chris, depending on what kind of information comes out later, or maybe not depending on what kind of information comes out, do you think that minds can still be changed? I mean, are people not so sort of set in their ideas of they believe the president did something wrong or they do not believe the president did something wrong that anything can shake them of that belief?
Well, I mean, I agree with Marcus. There's a lot of people who had made up their minds. That is true. But I also think there are folks in the middle who just everyday folks who, you know, haven't been paying and don't have the luxury of paying attention to this all the time, every day, the way some pundits like us, I suppose, can and do. So I think those people are persuadable. And I think it's also about the long game here, the long-term health of the country. You know, we cannot have a situation in which any president of either political party decides that he or she can do whatever they want as long as they deem it to be in the national interest, including basically shaking down a foreign government to assist in their political campaigns. That can't possibly be good for either party.
Marcus, let me ask you about something you said just a minute ago, which is that for a lot of voters, they're either they've made their minds up about the election. They're either with the president or they're not. For those that are not, do you get the sense that it matters who the nominee is? It struck me that people have decided they're either voting for the president or they're voting against the president, but there is going to be somebody else on the ballot.
Yeah, and again, I said the overwhelming majority have already made up their mind. There is that little window of people that are undecided, and it's and when you compare it to 4 years ago, I mean that window is closed so significantly. It's somewhat terrifying, but so those people, I think it will make a difference of whether it's Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, and you know that's where the fight is going to be with that roughly 17% who don't already have their mind made up.
So, Marcus, if this gets done tonight or tomorrow, let's say, we know Tuesday night, big night for the president, State of the Union address. So are speeches being written right now and torn up and deciding how much of a victory lap the president's going to try to do? How much of the impeachment proceedings are going to be involved in this speech?
God, just looking at you, the word awkward comes to mind. Yeah, absolutely. Speeches are being written right now. And I think this president has proven time and time again that he's willing to rip up a speech at the very last minute. And I expect that to be happening. I mean, there will be edits up until, well, let's be frank. He's going to edit while he's at the dais giving the speech. So,
he doesn't use a prompter though, right?
He will use a prompter. He's been better about that. He's been better about staying on message. But I think that it will be touch and go. There is no doubt about it.
Chris, what do you think about that? Is that something we're going to see? Is there going to be – we've often heard State of the Union addresses can be sort of bringing the country together, sort of what am I going to do next?
How that's not going to happen.
Right. So, what sort of attitude do you expect to see?
I think that Trump will have a hard time doing anything but take a massive victory lap over this impeachment vote, which is going to be an acquittal. So I think there'll be a lot of talk about that. I think they'll probably be, you know, using that speech as a springboard for the rest of the campaign to come. And so, you know, but again, that's going to be divisive. You know, you've got half of the country, or at the very least, all Democrats who think that this was really not much of a trial at all. It wasn't fair. It was stymied and obstructed from the beginning. And so, I can't believe that that's going to be anything but, really divisive in the room.
Well, does the president then, sitting next to the first lady, for example, is Lev Parnas going to be up there? Who's the guest going to be up there?
Marcus? Yeah, I'll throw that one to you.
Me. I have, you know, God only knows who the guest will be, but it'll be, there's always about 7 or 8 guests in the gallery with personal stories that relate back to a policy decision moving forward or a past policy decision. And I think that'll certainly be the case here. You know, they just recently signed what I affectionately call as NAFTA 2.0, but that's not really what we call it. We call it USMCA.
Yeah.
And I think that there will be some consideration about that as it relates to redoing trade deals, because I think that that has been a hallmark of his presidency, whether you agree or disagree with it. I think it has been part of it. And I think he'll be have to talk about how that results in economic value to Americans.
Well, but I think also the State of the Union is going to be another touch point or pinch point where, you know, it becomes increasingly obvious to the American people that Republicans in the Senate are doing nothing, that the Senate has become the place where all policy dies. And you know, I don't know what Trump is going to be able to tout except for, you know, obviously a strong stock market. And a strong stock market doesn't affect the vast majority of Americans. So, you know, I guess he'll talk about that, maybe the trade deal. Trade deal should have happened, right? I mean, that was an obvious one.
I disagree. I'm an equal opportunity basher. So I think Congress as a whole, including the House of Representatives, has done very little for a very long time.
Except the House keeps passing bills, Marcus.
They have the majority. The Democrats have the majority. That's certainly the case.
And but so they but, actually
but
do
they've
things.
Been been dictated by a left-leaning caucus of the progressives. And I think that that's what finally goaded Nancy Pelosi into going forward with the impeachment trial that she didn't actually want to do, but got goaded by her progressive left to enter into that. And as far as the economy goes, I would say, look, the stock market does have effect on everybody's retirement and pensions. So there is some value in that.
Chris, obviously the Arizona presidential preference election is still a ways away, an eternity in politics, I hear you guys say all the time. Do you get the sense that impeachment will still be on voters' minds, or maybe more to the point, the candidates' minds by the time they get here?
You know, I don't know about that. I mean, I kind of doubt it. My guess is that the candidates themselves will probably pivot away from it. But I would love to hear Marcus's view on that. I mean, I do think that, you know, Arizona is going to be a little bit interesting on the Democratic side, obviously, because you've got Mike Bloomberg playing heavily here. He's going to be here in town this weekend on Saturday at his local offices. He's been here before. He's spending money here. And then, of course, you have, you know, Steyer as well, who's playing in a number of the Super Tuesday states. So, I mean, it could be somewhat interesting in that regard. But, you know, if Bernie comes out of Iowa and New Hampshire with a head of steam and then starts winning, I don't know. It's going to be interesting in other ways.
You know, I'm glad you brought this subject up, because if you really want to know about presidential preference primaries, you need to buy a book called Spin Priests, written by your guest here, Chris Mays. It's available on Amazon.
I'll be giving him
$5. That will give you the real-life version of what happens. It's not the House of Cards. You don't stay at the Waldorf Astoria. You don't drive a Lamborghini to work. But it'll give you the real life experience of what it's like to work on a presidential campaign. That being said, look, I'm impressed by Bloomberg. He is running about, by my math calculations, about $3 million just payroll, not his overhead, not his paid advertising that's going on, not his digital. He's spending a boatload of money in Arizona. And so I think this is a throwdown state for him heading into Super Tuesday. There's no doubt about that. Tom Steyer's obviously spending the when you have that much money, you're running a national strategy, and that's what he is clearly doing. I knew he was rich, but oh my God, this guy's really, really rich. You know, that's part of his strategy. Joe Biden, of course, is going on the state by state. He's going to be making a trip to Arizona, but I would argue Biden's folks at this point need to be locking down endorsements in Arizona. You don't have the money to compete, but you certainly have the value of old-time relationships in Arizona, and that you need to start locking those down ASAP. Because with that payroll that Bloomberg's running, that's what he's doing today, right now, making those phone calls.
And guys, before we go to break, Chris, just briefly on Bloomberg, you know, obviously we go state by state, that's important, but Bloomberg in the national polls is now showing up as number three, having surpassed Elizabeth Warren as well. I mean, is it legit? Could we see New York billionaire against New York kind of billionaire?
I think you could. I mean, here's the what I think they're going for, and I think when you look at the Arizona demographic, that both Biden, totally agree with Marcus on this, Biden should be locking up those endorsements, but both Biden and Bloomberg, at least on paper, should play well here, given our demographics, given the politics of Arizona, given the more centrist Democratic politics of Arizona. But Bloomberg is also playing for California, and that money can buy you something in California. Obviously, it can buy you something in Arizona, too. But for sure, you know, that's a treasure trove of delegates in California. If he does well there, then, you know, all bets are really off, and who knows what's going to happen.
And Marcus, how does Bloomberg affect Mark Kelly when we talk about gun control?
You know, I think Mark Kelly's running his own race, and I think, you know, I think it's easy to draw those comparisons about what if happens during the presidential race. But I think Mark Kelly in this environment is going to be able to separate himself from virtually anybody in any other race and sort of define himself and his messages. I think he's done a good job so far in setting the message, and it's going to be Martha's sort of challenge to rise to that and be able to define herself outside of being a fighter pilot and talk about sort of her family history and what drives her, and she's going to have to message stronger.
And we'll talk about Senator McSally in just a moment. Marcus Delartino, Chris May is our guest today. With Mark Brody, I'm Steve Goldstein. NewsCap continues after this. It's the Friday NewsCap here on KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guest today, Marcus Delartino of First Strategic and former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair, Chris Mays Marcus, as we went to break, very good segue by you, mentioned Martha McSally. And now we want to hear this anti-McSally ad from another GOP group.
Martha McSally, Arizona rejected you in 2018, and you know why. You were too close to Donald Trump, and you lost badly. Now you've gone full Trump. Again.
Man, you're a liberal hack. I'm not talking to you.
You knew Arizona wanted the truth. We demanded witnesses and evidence in the trial of Donald Trump. Oh, there's a reason your poll numbers are dropping fast. And you're on your way to defeat. Oh, that's right, Martha. Again. Arizona has always produced mavericks, true independents. People like John McCain and Barry Goldwater, senators that served Arizona. People of courage, toughness. They stood for what was right, no matter the political risk. And they are remembered as American heroes. And you, Martha, you'll be remembered as just another Trump hack. If you're remembered at all.
So, ouch, huh?
Oh, what a sweet ad.
I'm glad we're going positive so early in the campaign. Right. It's really nice, right? What, Marcus, what do you make of that?
You know, I think that ad targets the wrong audience is the best way I can put it. I will tell you that I think that that ad, and I could be proven wrong, and I'm happy to admit when I'm wrong, but, well, I'm okay admitting when I'm wrong. But I think that ad was written by a man. Here's my issue, is that the golden goose is women, okay, and moderate women, independent women. And immediately, because that ad is dark, it's shot in black and white, the voiceover is a little angry, it doesn't help with women. It turns them off. And that's not the goal that you're trying to succeed in. So I think it's fun for talking about, but I don't think the effect that people are hoping for, you know, I'm sure somebody made a whole lot of money off that ad, but I don't think it's going to achieve the goal that would be for a good strategic move during a campaign.
Chris, what do you think?
Well, I think Marcus is dialed into me, apparently, because I'm a moderate woman, and I totally agree with him. Yeah, even for me, and I'm a Democrat, but I consider myself a centrist Democrat, and I think it was my visceral reaction to that ad was, gosh, it's just mean. You know, Martha McSally, you lost badly, or Martha McSally, you won't ever be remembered by anyone. I mean, you know, that's just silly. Why would you run an ad like that? Even if sort of the substance, obviously what they were trying to get at was, you know, you are not the kind of centrist, pragmatic, independent-minded Republican that we're used to in Arizona, a.k.a. John McCain, but it's just over the top.
Well, Marcus, those arguments seem like arguments that have been used against Martha McSally before. Do you think that the arguments themselves could be effective, maybe just not in this format?
You know, maybe. I think that there's a better way to do it. I will tell you, you know, obviously our firm does ads. This is what we do. We don't do them for candidates, just so I'm clear about that. We don't do candidate campaigns. But what we have been moving towards, and I'll be honest with you, it's highly successful, is humor. People will stay dialed in if they're getting a kick out of what you're doing. And there's a bunch of different formats. And heck, give us a call. We'll be happy to charge you appropriately. But but that's
lots of plugs today, Marcus.
But if you are looking to get females dialed in, and you know, maybe because I'm a product of being raised by a single mother and I live with
three daughters
yeah. And I'm married to my wife. Yeah. I'm more tuned in than anybody. But use the humor, use a lighter discussion, move away from the black and white and the harshness, because at the end of the day, it's not moving anybody. It's good for discussion, but it's not moving.
What I do think, though, it presages is what's going to happen in the election with Martha McSally and Mark Kelly and all the whoever the independent groups are that come in on that race, and there will be many, probably, which is she's going to have to own Trump, you know, and everybody's going to be making, you know, pointing out every single instance in which she sided with Trump, didn't challenge him. And frankly, during the impeachment proceedings, I was a little surprised, going back to that, that she didn't put some daylight between her and Trump. You know, that maybe a few more questions that were a little more searching and hard-hitting than the one that she issued.
Marcus, one more question for me on this, though, just in case listeners aren't connected on this. This was ostensibly a GOP group, though, that put out this ad. So that's what I'm wondering about even more, because, yes, if it had come from a pro-Mark Kelly group or independent expenditure group that may be tied to Kelly, do you think it matters at all that this comes from a GOP group? Does that indicate the sort of internecine battle going on there?
You know, for insiders.
That was a brophy word, by the way.
By the way, now they owe you money. just what they need. But anyway, I would say most voters are not going to be that in tune to that issue. You and I recognize that. Certainly Chris and Mark and a bunch of political insiders recognize that that's what's going on. But when the ad runs, most voters are not paying attention to that little script at the bottom of the ad or the voiceover. At that point, they've already tuned out or they've agreed with the ad either way. So they're not going to have enough time to look up who's this Lincoln group, who are they connected to, yada, yada, yada. But I will tell you this, it's certainly getting a lot of talk in political circles that it is Republicans doing this.
Does that ultimately matter? I mean, you mentioned that a lot of voters aren't going to look at the name on the bottom of the screen. And even if they do, they might not know what the Lincoln group or whatever it's called is. Does the fact that people are talking about it, does that maybe spread the word a little bit, or is that just sort of chatter inside?
Well, I would just say I think the fact of it matters. The fact that there are Republicans like me who frankly left the party. I left the party because of this president in large part and for a few other reasons. But, it does matter. There are a lot of Republicans who are going to vote in this election against this president and then against quite a few people down the ballot. So the fact of it matters, maybe not exactly who's doing it.
Yeah, I just don't think it's going to be running around on, front page above the fold banner news that Republicans are doing this at the end of the day. Is it an issue in the electorate? Are Republicans going to vote for some Democrats on the ballot? Sure. Are some Democrats going to vote for some Republicans on the ballot? Sure. I just don't think it's going to be a dominating reason for moving them. And again, I go back to the ad. I'm not too sure it targets the correct audience.
Well, you mentioned the Lincoln group. At least we don't hear, "I'm Abraham Lincoln and I approve this message."
That would be something, though.
Yeah, that would be amazing. That, yeah. Guys, one other thing I want to get to for sure. Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals issued this ruling about so-called ballot harvesting in Arizona, which ostensibly would affect lower-income folks, progressive voters for the most part. We expect this to go to the Supreme Court, Chris, but do you think this is a significant ruling?
I think it's huge, and it's an enormous win for Democrats I think, personally, for the entire state. I think it was a terrible law that banned, and I hate the word ballot harvesting, that basically prohibited organizations and entities and people from helping their neighbors and their community collect ballots, helping people who had trouble mailing those ballots in or getting it to a mailbox by collecting them and taking them down to a mailbox or to turning them in. And what the Ninth Circuit did was it said, look, that was clearly discriminatory against minority communities who are disproportionately impacted by that law. And by the way, it was also racially motivated, which was an interesting statement by several of the judges in the case. But yeah, it'll go to the Supreme Court. Brnovich has already said he's going to appeal it. Who knows what this Supreme Court says about this, given the Holder decision, which basically gutted the Voting Rights Act. But it was a big win for Democrats.
And Marcus, that's where bull hockey came from in our opening montage. That was Michelle Ugenti-Rita.
Is she going to say I'm bull hockey?
I'll give her a whole list of words she can use next time. But I will look. It's the Ninth Circuit, guys. It's the most liberal court in the land. There's no surprises that decision got made there, and there's certainly no surprise that it's going to get appealed. It's not shocking. Here's the issue for Republicans is that, and this is part of campaigning, and this is part of campaign strategy, and this is what people get paid to do, is to go into those high Democrat turnout areas and knock on doors and ask people for their ballots. For me, at some point I get frustrated. Like, how much easier do we have to make this for you, for the voting public? We mail a ballot to your house. All you have to do is walk out to your front yard and pick up your mail, which presumably you're already doing anyway, fill it out and stick it back in that mailbox. But for Republicans, you are taking the question is, what is the ability to mess with those ballots once they're picked up by a third party There's certainly cases of people picking up their wife's ballot or their mom's ballot and helping them. That's not the issue at the end of the day, what we're talking about. We're talking about going into high efficacy or low efficacy, frankly, Democrat precincts, knocking on people's doors that you don't know and asking them to return their ballots.
But I think what, you know, really what the court was saying here, and by the way, they didn't just throw out the ballot harvesting law. They also said that the state of Arizona can no longer throw out ballots that are cast in the wrong polling place, which we have been doing.
Go to the wrong precinct.
People go to the wrong precinct. Okay, you've got to let them vote. This was a decision that says, look, we believe in an expansive view of voting rights in this country and of voting, and we ought to make it easy for people to vote. This is the most fundamental aspect of being an American. Why would you try to curb that, constrain that, curtail that? That's not, the best view of democracy, and it's not, you know, and so that's what the decision did.
Understanding that a lot of people have lost a lot of money trying to predict what the Supreme Court is going to do, do either of you think that there's a chance that, not suggesting anybody in here is gambling, but any chance that this law is not stayed before the election? Like, do you think this will actually be allowed to happen during this election cycle?
I'm just fascinated with the new business plan I just came up with to vote on Supreme Court rulings. So
I'm sure somebody's already doing
it. I'm distracted with my new website name. That is an excellent question, and I am a little nervous to be betting on what the Supreme Court could come up with.
It's for entertainment purposes only, don't worry.
I wouldn't want to issue the stay as my gut reaction. I would not.
Yeah,
and I agree. You know, Chris has spent way more time in law classes than I have. I will say that. But I would be interested in her perspective.
No, I agree with Marcus. I guess I would be a little bit surprised if we saw a stay. I think, you know, this law was allowed to exist through at least one election cycle. Now, hopefully, in my mind, it will not exist in this election cycle, and the court will just decide later.
Okay, that's former Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays, Marcus Delartino of First Strategic. Guys, always good to see you. Thanks.
Thank you. Love to be here.